Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 208 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we're continuing our series on the self-sufficiency challenge that I've set myself for September, and we're zeroing in on another item that has sort of become more in focus as September looms on me, and that is grains and the idea of growing our own grains for things like flour and, of course, lots of other things. Now, as most of you will be aware, I'm about 3 years now into my self-sufficiency ideal and working towards self-sufficiency, and it's been an incredible experience and one that I've learned an awful lot from and continue to do so every single day. Now, along the path of the 3 years that I've already taken to get to where I am today, I've kind of romanticized the idea of growing my own grains. And every few months for the last 3 years, I've kind of looked into it and thought, right, this is something I must have a play with. And then, for whatever reason, not followed through. And of course, with this September challenge just around the corner, the idea of grains is one that is really top of mind at the moment. And, you know, we use a tremendous amount of flour as one of our staple crops. And, you know, the world over uses grains as a staple crop. And until recently, you know, we were relying on shop-bought alternatives. We would, you know, without the idea of purchasing grains, we would have no access to rice, flour for thickening stocks and stews, bread making. We'd have no access to pasta. And of course, you know, these things, rice, bread and pasta, make up really big parts of almost everyone's diet in the Western world, I would suggest. So now, I say until recently, it's because recently we've started, you know, acquiring flour from our local bakery that we have a little deal, and we trade our eggs for them. So it works out really, really well. So I do have access to flour, and all of a sudden that opens up a lot of those foods that I just mentioned. You know, I can now make my own pasta, I can certainly make my own bread, and of course, you know, the actual flour itself for use in recipes. But it's still not growing it myself, it's still not completely, you know, being self-sufficient insofar as what I can produce here. It's a bit of a clause in the contract, if you like, that allows me access to these things. And it's okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that. It's, you know, it's part of the world we live in. And I've no real desire, might not be the right word, but no real, you know, view that in the long term I will be self-sufficient in grains insofar as growing them myself. I'm okay with a bit of bartering, that's fine by me, but I certainly want the experience of growing them. And like I say, every few months I dabble with the idea and never take it any further. Now, of course, part of this is because we have our vegetable garden that is up and running and doing really well and provides us with, you know, with things like potatoes that just give us more yield per space and effort than we're going to get from grains. But that doesn't mean that grains are forever off the table. And obviously, with this episode coming out, I've done even more research and looked into it a little bit more. So, you know, the truth of the situation is that producing things like fruits and vegetables and changing our diets slightly around what we can produce, the vegetable garden is going to well overproduce what we need insofar as things like starchy materials. You know, I've mentioned potatoes and also squashes. And, you know, beans and anything like that are going to overproduce if you take into account not just the yield insofar as weight per square meter, but also insofar as effort involved. But, you know, that said, there's still an element of me that will never let go of this idea of growing home scale grains for myself and at least giving it a go. So there are lots and lots of options when we talk about grains, and we're going to talk through all of them today, one of them being rice. Now, there's something called land rice, and that's going to be the topic, or growing rice in general is going to be the topic of its own episode. So I'm not going to go too much into detail on that today, but, you know, rice is definitely an option, whether you're thinking of setting up, you know, paddy fields or just actual land rice, which is a different option that I've only recently become aware of through a YouTube comment someone left for me. So, you know, these are things that are going to be the subject of a future podcast. But we can look outside of rice, and we're going to start with oats and barley. Now, they're completely different grains to rice, but any sort of, I think the definition of a grain is, you know, a grass, basically, a grass that we're going to harvest for the seeds. So completely different grains, oats and barley, but the idea of growing them is really keen on me because they're a cool weather grain. And, you know, we're going to be able to grow them over winter. They're going to tolerate our winters really, really well. They're actually going to be okay down to temperatures of minus 15 degrees C. That's for oats, and barley even cooler. So I am thinking that I might grow a little patch of each of these in our vegetable patch over winter this year and see how we get on. Of course, the straw that's left from it will be used as bedding or for mulches, and then we would harvest the oats and barley. Now, oats is something that we're all probably familiar with as a breakfast type meal, and, you know, just, we're going to talk a little bit about the processing and the threshing and all that entails later on in the episode. But for now, we're just going to talk about the different types of grains that are available. So, you know, we've eaten oats for breakfast for years in this house, and, you know, the world over does so. And we would add really simple ingredients to that, you know, fruits or seeds or whatever, to make a kind of granola. And using these things and growing these ourselves in a garden is certainly one option for using up some of our space to fill a gap where we're talking about grains. But I suppose outside of oats and barley, the one that most people think about when they're thinking about grains is wheat. And that's because wheat is what we would mostly use to make flours. There's several varieties of wheat, but again, there are winter and spring varieties. The hard red wheat varieties are the ones that you would usually see used for making baking flour, and they can grow in both the cool and the warm seasons. So that's another plant that I'm strongly considering growing a little bit of overwintering in our vegetable bed this year. Now, I'm sure it's obvious to all of you guys, but I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, I've never, ever grown grains. So everything that I'm talking about today isn't a result of my experience. It's a result of my research and, you know, what I'm looking up and considering doing in the future. So just, you know, bear that in mind. But with that said, some warm season grains, I've been told and led to believe, they will mature in as little as 30 days after germination. And, you know, compare that to the overwintered grains, which are going to need anything up to sort of 9 months before they're ready to harvest. I suppose that needs to go in the pot when we're considering our yields. You know, the fact that they can be matured in as little as 30 days means that perhaps we could use them as a catch crop even. But there's some basic steps that we need to know to bring everything that we've grown in all of our grains from our gardens and into our kitchens. So we're going to talk a little bit now about the harvesting and processing of grains. And this is a very general idea, but it's one that can be applied, I think, across the board with a few exceptions, notably corn, which we will talk about separately. So you'd harvest your grains when the stalks are just beginning to brown, when they're turning from green to brown, and you'd use traditionally a scythe, but of course on larger manufacturing, big agricultural fields, they would use a combine harvester to do that, but we would use a scythe, just any sharp tool really to cut them, and you want to cut them just above the ground, at which point you tie them into bunches. Now, the idea of this is you're going to tie them so they kind of stand upright. We've all seen the images of a sheave of of corn or whatever it might be, and you'd tie them into bunches so they'd stand upright, and the heads, of course, would be up off the ground. And you'd leave them there for about 2 weeks, somewhere that's not going to get any rain, somewhere protected. So you might dry them on the floor in, you know, some kind of outbuilding which has got lots and lots of air running through it, or you could even hang them from the ceiling of a barn or a porch. Or here, we would probably use some of our areas underneath our eaves. We live in a thatched cottage and we've got really deep eaves that kind of protect everything up against the walls. So we could use that area there. And you're going to basically just leave it to dry for a couple of weeks until it's so dry that it's hard and kind of crunchy if you bite into it. At which point, and this is, you know, that's just the first step. So it is really, or it's always been for me, it's been the idea that the processing of it is so labour intensive that has led me to think that long term, I don't think it's going to be something that we ever become sort of completely, permanently and perpetually self-sufficient in. Coupled that with obviously the cost of it and the ease of acquiring it through other methods. But that aside, once it's dried out, you'd spread it over a tarp or a sheet or something on the floor. And you'd basically just beat it with, you know, a long stick or something to release all of the grains from the seed heads. Now, this process is called threshing. We've all probably heard of threshing and winnowing. Well, this is the threshing part. Once the grains are all separated from the seed heads, then, and this bit, I'm not sure, it just sounds so onerous, but this is the bit that really puts me off, is that we would then collect them up and we'd basically transfer them into a big bowl or a bucket, and we'd do that by kind of having a fan set up. And if you imagine the fan set up on quite a light breeze, or you could do it outside if it was just a light breezy day, but you have a fan set up on a low setting to basically blow across the top of the bucket, and you would pick up the seed heads and the grains and everything together and drop them down into the bucket. And the idea is that breeze would blow away the chaff, that other phrase that we're all familiar with, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff, because the chaff is so light that, you know, it's the papery covering that is around the grain, and it will just blow away and the handfuls of grain would fall into that container. So this process is what is called winnowing, at which point we would have our clean grain, and we would pop that in a glass jar and store it in a cool, dark place until we're ready, at which point we would mill it. So now we would need a, you know, a really heavy duty blender or some kind of grain mill to pass it through, and we would mill it into flour. So that's the process, and it does sound something that I'd really enjoy on a small scale, and as a bit of an experiment, and to learn the process and, you know, get in touch with the process. But again, just if you imagine doing that to make enough flour for your annual needs, if you were then going to use that flour to make all of your bread and all of your pasta, then, you know, and pastry and all your other things that you use flour for, we're talking about quite a lot. I mean, I know that we would probably be looking at needing, I don't know, maybe 5 kilograms a week, maybe more, depending on how you look at it. So you times that by 52 and, you know, you've got getting up there near 300 kilograms of flour that you would need. So the amount of effort involved in making that is substantial and certainly not to be underestimated. So the next thing to say is that for some grains, there's actually an extra step as well before they can be milled, and that's to remove the hull. And this would be for oats as well as buckwheat and rice. They're examples of grains with a hard outer hull. Now, one method of doing that, which again seems to me to be a little bit onerous, is to run the grain lightly through a blender to crack the holes and separate them from the grain. And then you would sift them out with your fingers, or find the perfect size sieve or colander or metal mesh that basically allows you to riddle them and allows the grain to fall through but removes the husks. So it sounds to me like, you know, that extra step is just another layer of difficulty that kind of makes the process less and less appealing to us home growers. But that doesn't mean that there aren't some types of grain that we would choose to do it with. You know, wheat doesn't require this extra step. And, you know, most grain mills actually are capable of removing the hulls. So if you've got the right grain mill with the right special extra attachment, then you can do it as part of your milling process. So it can be done, and I'm sure at some point in the future here it will be done, but it's not something I've done yet. But that's not to say that, you know, the whole idea should be discarded, because there are some much simpler ways of growing and producing grains, and we're going to talk about some of those throughout the rest of the episode. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So, with all that said, is it worth it? Well, it really depends on what you're trying to achieve, but it's certainly for me worth it to go through the experience and learn for myself. So, lots of people might think that you need acres and acres, really, to grow grains, but you can grow, you know, grains on a much smaller scale, and obviously your yields are going to represent that. But one example I found online that is that a 305 square meter backyard, for instance, can grow at least a bushel of wheat, which is equivalent to nearly four and a half stone of grain, and that can make about 90 loaves of bread. So I don't need to be able to grow quite that much, and that's more space than I would give over to it. But even a row in your vegetable garden will probably yield enough to, you know, make a loaf or two of bread and go through the experience. So it goes without saying that, you know, wheat is the natural starting point if we're going to be making flour or, you know, for bread making or anything like that, because it's the ubiquitous flour. The wheat flour is what we generally see in our stores. When we just buy a plain flour, then it's going to be a wheat flour. So one of the best things about it is it can thrive in a diverse range of soils and climates, and you have to choose a variety of wheat that is going to work for you. But the two most common are winter wheat, which you would plant, as I've said, during the autumn, and then you'd harvest that in the subsequent summer, and spring wheat, which you'll plant in spring and harvest later in that summer. Now, that's not to say wheat is your only option, but there's, you know, lots of choice. But like I say, wheat for me is the one that if I'm only going to attempt one, and in whatever year, perhaps that will be the case, then, you know, wheat would be the one that I would try first. But you can also grow barley, rye, buckwheat, millet, oats, and they're almost all grown in a similar fashion. And most of them have pretty much identical requirements. You know, you're going to get a better crop from decent soil. You're going to get a better crop from a fair climate and, you know, decent amounts of water and sunshine. But basically, if you're going to attempt it, the simplest thing is just to, you know, choose the grain that you want to grow and work out the space that you're going to give them. Now, whether that's a row in your vegetable garden or whether it's just a series of containers that you're going to grow them in, or a dedicated seed bed if you've got enough space, then, you know, make sure that it's somewhere that gets full sunlight. Get your seeds and sow them. You can sow them by hand. We would just sow them about 2 inches deep and rake over the soil over the top, or however you're going to sow them. And then I have seen it recommended that you would spread loose straw over the soil. And that's, again, just to trap some of those moisture elements in the soil and to keep your seeds moist. And then after planting, again, you just keep that soil moist for the most part. And that's going to do it. That's going to be how you grow them. They're a really simple plant to grow. And you can actually grow grains on a much smaller scale if you want to extend and think outside the box about what you're growing. You can grow on a really small scale without too much work if you grow different crops. Things like quinoa. Now, quinoa and amaranth, they're technically known as, I think, pseudo-grains, as they're not from the family of grasses. But they can be a really good choice for home or allotment growers, because compared to some of the other grains that we've been talking about, they're going to produce better on a smaller scale and also easier to harvest and process. There's a bit less work in, you know, the back end with these things. So
if you want to plant amaranth, for example, then you're going to get about 200,000 seeds per plant, which is and they're really easy to thrash as well. The seeds don't need grinding, and they're so tiny that you just add them to whatever you're cooking as they are. So that's a great option, and definitely one that I will also be considering. Like I said, I haven't actually determined exactly where I'm going with this yet for myself, but it's been an absolute... just a real eye-opener, really, digging into this topic to get a grip and kind of start to crystallize my ideas going forward as to what I will and won't try in the immediate future. But quinoa is another one. It's a high-protein grain that you can easily grow at home, and you would cook it pretty much just like rice. And as well as tasting nice, it's rich in something called lysine, which is very nutritionally dense. And it's also naturally protected from insects and rodents and birds by this coating that is on the seeds that tastes pretty bitter, but is easily removed. You just soak the seeds and then rinse it a few times with cold water before boiling. And it's really, really simple. It's no more hassle than drying dried beans if you use those. And it means you use less of the crop to anything out there in the garden that might be wanting to nibble on it. So quinoa is definitely a great option. Now, I don't know if you're a forager or not, but if you're familiar with the plant fat hen, or lamb's quarters is its other name, that is very, very closely related to quinoa. And I recently did a YouTube video on that plant, and it is growing all around the world as a weed, including in the US, Australia, all over Europe. And that is, as I said, is a very, very close relation to quinoa. And you can actually harvest the seeds of that in much the same way. So if you wanted to have a go at using something very, very similar to quinoa seeds without actually going through the growing process, that is an option that's available for you as well. The last one that we're going to focus in on today is sweet corn. Now, sweet corn is probably, of all the grains, the one that most of us have grown or have considered growing already. But the sweet corn, and the corn that we usually grow in our gardens, where we're going to harvest the cob and eat the whole cob, basically, or eat directly from the cob, is a different variety to the one that would be used to make flour. Now, there's lots and lots and lots of different options available here insofar as varieties. And I personally have never milled corn, but there's, a, you know, grinding corn is its own thing. And there are, as I said, there's lots of different varieties. But I think if you want to have a go at growing corn flour, then I think that's definitely within all of our reach. So once you've got a suitable variety, like I say, you don't want the sweet corn that we would normally grow for the cobs, but a variety that is grown for the flour itself, like a meal corn, I think it's called. But like I say, check out the varieties. And I think different places call them different names. But once you've got that, you grow it just like you would sweet corn. But once you've got it grown, you leave the corn attached to the stalk for as long as possible. And you don't harvest them when we would traditionally harvest sweet corn that we're going to boil and serve with butter. We leave them to basically dry out on the stalk for as long as possible. You do want to harvest them before the frosts come. And if you live in a wet environment, as we do here in the UK, then you're also going to want to pull them in before too much of the wet weather comes, because that can risk causing rot, molds and decay. So once you've left them as long as you possibly can, you want to pull back the husks to expose those kernels to the air and remove them and basically tie them into little groups of eight or so and leave them hanging somewhere. You want to leave them hanging somewhere that's out of direct sunlight, but somewhere that is quite warm and with really good airflow. And you just leave them until those kernels are rock hard, so hard that if you were to push them with your fingernail, they won't dent. And at that point, it's time to remove them. Now, it can be, I'm led to believe, quite a physically demanding job, insofar as that they're so hard that they can actually take their toll on your hands. So you might want to wear gloves at this point, perhaps a thick pair of leather gloves or something. But at which point we're ready to shell them. So you would just grab the corn, the ear, the whole ear with the really, really hard sweet corns on, and basically just grab with one hand and twist with the other hand and, you know, just work them all free into a little pot, at which point they can sit and go in a a glass jar, like a kilner jar or something, because they're going to be bone dry at this point, and sit until you're ready to grind them. And then you would just grind them into flour to get corn flour. So it does sound like one of the simpler options. And of course, you can grind them through a grain mill, or I'm sure a food processor would work as well. And, you know, there you go, you have corn flour. So that's definitely something that I think is worth trying, because I think the idea of trying that one is just as simple as buying the right seeds. You know, you buy the right seeds and do everything that you're normally going to do in your garden, but you just plant some of these as well as your regular corn. And of course, if you're growing corn, you'll probably already know that you should plant them in a block, not just a row, because of how they pollinate. They pollinate by wind. So if you have them in a row, you'll find you might get poor pollination. But in a block, you're far more likely to get nice full ears of corn. And like I say, that gives a really nice alternative to some of the other grains out there, insofar as we feel a little bit more, I do, feel a little bit more comfortable that the process beyond the planting is just super simple. You know, we know pretty much how to get the end result and where we're going with it. So there's some options, there's some ideas. I hope that I have inspired you to maybe think about trying some. I hope I haven't put you off. And but, you know, it's an honest appraisal of what I think about grains. And of course, everything is against the backdrop of, you know, how much time we have available, how much space we have available, and, you know, making our decisions accordingly. That's going to wrap up this episode. I hope you found it instructive, and I thank you, all of you, very, very much for listening, and I will speak to you really soon. Cheers. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.